Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and people. It's Philip Wilkerson back with another episode of Positive Filter. I'm joined by a special guest. Everyone's a special guest because they take their time to join me on my show. I'm joined by Mike Wasaki. And so I've come to know that we actually have not met. You know, he's all the way in Hawaii, but we've been engaged and connected for almost, I think now, almost a year. And we got connected through mutual connections. I think he's plugged in into the Boston University area. I really believe it was like this career consortium group or something. And Mike reached out to me and was like, yo, you seem like you know what you're talking about. Would you mind, you know, taking a look? I think you sent me a little bit early copies of your book and say, would you check it out? Or would you mind writing a little review of the book and all that? And I was like, all right, like, no one's ever asked me to, you know, give my advice on someone else's books. I felt very flattered and I responded. And then we got engaged and we stayed in connected. I started a LinkedIn group with just professionals that want to connect via LinkedIn, an engagement group. And Mike joined that group and was engaged in that and learning techniques in LinkedIn. And so this is just a great way, like continuing that collaboration and engagement and getting to know each other. But this is great because like, I've always gone with it. Like, you never know how you can connect to people and what spaces connect people. I never thought I'd be doing a podcast with someone all the way in Hawaii. So this is just wild for me. So Mike, you know, as we get started about particularly your book, you know, Careers by the People, give the listeners a little overview of who you are.
Yeah, sure. And thank you, Phil, by the way. And thanks for that nice introduction. You've been so helpful, especially with the endorsements of the book and the readings of the book, et cetera. So, which is awesome. So my name is Mike Wasaki, and I'm the author of the book Careers by the People. And that's the website, too, careersbythepeople.com. The book basically reviews 101 careers from the people who actually work them. So the fact about it is it's not vague information. It's clear and concise. Each person was asked 20 plus questions. The majority have 5, 10, 15 years in their field. We're talking about CEOs, actuaries, accountants, all over the map, broken into 6 different chapters, broken under the Holland's occupational themes. And each chapter has been updated for modern day technology because John Holland was back in the 50s. And then I start off with the introduction and the conclusion. And in that section, I talk about myself as a first generation low income student and how I struggled after college as I wasn't prepared for the real world. So I offer the students some suggestions and ideas of what I should have done to find a career that was more fulfilling. I mean, as a first generation low income student, I went after one subject only, and it was money, money, money. Satisfaction wasn't there. It wasn't even a thought process. It was go out and make as much cabbage as you can and see how it goes. I did do, you know, well financially, I could say, but I had no joy for what I did in my career. I wish I could go back. Like everybody says, I wish I could go back and change things. I wish I could go back and enjoy what I did, or, you know, I had some interest. But the good news is I did get a bunch of endorsements from not only people like yourself, but also top-notch schools. I got military endorsements, student endorsements. So, you know, the website has a lot of great stuff, you know, YouTube videos. And so I've been really trying to get the word out. And I just want to help the next generation, especially the first-gen low incomes, move to what they want to do and enjoy what they want to do and make some cash as well. But I mean, a career is 40 years. You might as well enjoy it. I mean, it's twice as long as you've been in college for the most people. So that's the overall in a few minutes. Thank you.
Well, I love it. But what was your background in? So you went to college, you know, obviously, and I think you dabbled in sales from what I've heard and your experiences. I listened to other podcasts that you've been on. So, you know, how's your other experiences in your career kind of led you to this point to write a book?
Great question, Phil. Here's the real angle behind it there. I did go to college. I went to University of Massachusetts, and I was lucky in a sense to get in there. It's a very good school. And from there, I mean, all my thought process was block everything out and get a college degree. And from the college degree, the world is paved with gold. But as you and I know, that's not true. You get a college degree, but you have to prepare because you're out there in this world and you're competing with students from other colleges. You're competing with people who might have a, you know, a GED or high school degree, but yet they get 5 years experience in that industry. So why would anybody hire this college kid with no experience really to, you know, be in that corporation? I just hired the guy with more experience. So that was always a stumbling block. So after I got out of college, I started in corporate America and I wasn't, you know, I was fulfilled. I wasn't challenged. I was just doing a, you know, starting entry level job at a good company. But the point is, I wanted what else is out there? What else is out there? It drove me nuts. And so I bounced around the Boston area at these different gigs for, you know, 6 months, a year, a half year, all of that. And I also got involved with tech sales back then too. But I wasn't at, you know, the companies I worked for, one of them I did make some good cash at. The other one was extremely miserable. And it was, you know, it just wasn't a joy. So I kind of threw it all in and I gave up. And then I'm like, you know what? At 26, I was like, to hell with everything. Let me just focus on what I want to do and where I should go with myself. So I said, go to Los Angeles. And it took 2 years trying to really analyze this, of what to do and how to figure this out. Go to LA, I'll write movie scripts, I'll make a ton of money, blah, blah, blah. As you know, again, that rarely ever happens, right? So I went to Los Angeles and connected with one of my buddies who was back in tech. I mean, I was barely surviving in Los Angeles. Connected with a buddy, he was in tech sales. He goes, hey, I know a company out there. And weirdly enough, the company was two towns away, so I could get there pretty quickly. And I started in tech sales. And from there, I started meeting other people who became very successful. And they helped me out because having a head of steel and being aggressive, you can do it and you can make it in sales. Is it a joy? No, it's very stressful and there's no fun. But the fact about it is you can do well and you can live a better lifestyle than being from the lower income areas. So, you know, you get to go to nice steak restaurants on the company. You get to go to sporting events on the company. You get to travel on the company. So it's not like it's out of your pocket. And that was something that was interesting to me and a lot of my associates in the LA area.
So when did you say, I love how you say, you know, most people start chasing cabbage. When did it stop being like fulfilling for you? And you're like, there's more out there. And now you're doing things of giving back. And I think a lot of things you're talking about, I mean, with the book I read, it's about like day-to-day life and values. And where did you start diving into like the other aspects, you know, about other things that make people happy in their careers rather than just money?
Yeah. And actually, Bill, wow, you get some really, your questions are awesome. I'm doing this tech career gig and every day was the same. It was ultra monotony and I'm doing the same stuff. And I recall one of my associates from San Diego came up and he goes, I've listened to you, you know, he goes, once a year I come up here to listen to your sales pitch to educate people or sell to people or talk to clients. And he goes, it's the same pitch every year, just the jokes change. And, you know, I mean, because it's so boring. So every day was the same. It was in sales, it's the same stuff. It's just constantly chasing a number. And if you hit the number, sales management increases the number. If you don't hit it, they threaten to fire you or take your territory. So it's never a joy. And so I sat back and I'm like, you know, I mean, is everybody out there like me? Is everybody out there like, you know, this miserable or unchallenged or, you know, see no joy other than a paycheck? No complaints about the money. Other than a paycheck, is there any joy? And so I'm like, let me figure this out. And the good thing about money and capitalism is you can do things that you can't in the lower incomes. So I got a website built. I didn't build it. I built a website. No, I didn't. I paid a guy to build a website. And I came up with all these questions, what I wanted to ask people about their career and career choices. And it was amazing because I was doing it before work on the weekends. And I'm like sending these questionnaires out and getting responses. And if I couldn't find, you know, careers that, you know, obviously the same. You know, a lot of guys in tech, a lot of nurses, a lot of teachers would fill them out. I got some cool guys in the, you know, like the police departments and all like that. But you'd have to, you know, network and all like that. But I was like, you know, what other opportunities, you know, companies are out there? like actuaries. I have no connection to actuaries, so I call the actuary association saying, can you get some guys to fill it out? Accountants. So I just tried, you know, you tried to reach out, and that was at the beginning of LinkedIn, and it was just more, it was just more open. And so, and you know, you didn't have all these scammers out there. And so, you know, I tried a lot of angles and tried to get to different people. You know, back then, I mean, I'm sure I bought some email lists that were a waste of time, but it really boiled down to, if you can link out, you know, reach out to people. And a lot of the people in my book are people that I knew from, like, you know, one or two, you know, like certain people in the book, you know, were old executives of my companies, guys that mm-hmm. worked with them, like that. But they sat back and they built it out. And it was amazing, because you have some close friends who just like blow it off. And I'm like, really? Well, you must be a super good buddy of mine, where you have people that, you know, you're not the closest to, who fill out some of the most amazing sales. This guy I used to work with, I mean, we weren't really even close. I mean, we kind of like butted heads a lot, but I mean, he was an ethical businessman, but we just had different views of the world. And he filled it out. And my God, I looked at him like, this is perfect. It's going to make the book, because, and I'm like, wow. You know, so it was wild. Another guy, you know, who was the CEO, who I knew in LA more from the gym and stuff like that we talked about, did an awesome job. So it's amazing where you come up with the different people that filled them out. And here's a great one for you. So as the book comes out, this guy I know, Steve, from he's an Orange County engineer. His response was awesome. Why am I not in the book? And I'm like, oh my God, Steve. I go, there's two more books to write. So I go, you can fill out a questionnaire, maybe make the next one or the third book. But I got a lot of the responses of people were actually offended or upset that they didn't make the book. And one guy who made the book, when he wrote, you know, a few years back, he's like, whoa, this is, he goes, can I help on the next book? And I'm like, yeah, you know. So it's been an interesting, you know, process. So yeah.
I love it. Man, send me the survey. I want to fill it out just because. I love that. I think it's fun. I think it might be a good icebreaker.
Oh, no, you'd be perfect for the next one. Perfect. Yeah.
All right. I'll fill it out. And I feel like it's a great icebreaker when I meet someone with a new career. Mike, I'm going to do this for you. If I meet someone that has a career that I'm interested in, I'm going to send them the form too to get to know them. Cause I think it's cool. I think you learn people's stories from that. And I love that. I need to send it to the group. I made like a random Google survey one time, kind of like this, but it wasn't asking serious questions. It was like, do you like barbecue? Yes or no? What's your dream car? But I love you learn things about people through that. And I'm gonna send that to you too, Mike, my random form. I call it my new friend survey. Cause I just like to learn new things about people.
Yeah, I love barbecue, but I could care less about cars. So,
well, they skip the thing, it. Though,
yeah, if somebody you know you talk to has a career that doesn't interest you, that's still a good person, a good connection. Because here's the thing: is you and I have a lot of things in common. But on the flip side, though, another person that we don't know might want to be in an opportunity or a job that we could care less about. I mean, example, accounting. I always tell people. It bored me to tears, but you know what my CPA I deal with? I thank God he became a CPA, because I mean, I trust this guy big time. And so it just, we're all different and everybody wants to do something for some reason. And that's the interesting part about it. It's wild. Cause some of the ones I read about, I'm like, this is as dull as possible, but yet the person did a really good job and it was really, you know, it might help somebody else out. So some of the careers is just like, oh my God, I would never do that. But somebody might do it.
Well, I think about the volume of information you're getting. Here's one thing. How'd you formulate the questions? How'd you realize what questions were ones that I wanted to ask people in the original form or the form? That's my first question. And then after that, I have my other question.
Okay, let's go with that one. Great question, actually. God, man. Okay, TV people, if you're listening, please hire Phil to do a TV show. These are the best questions so far. Even though Phil's a buddy, but I still think he should be on TV. The point is, the questions came out, you know, obviously they were my questions in my head, but I connected with some of the guys I used to work with or in my industry. And I'm like, hey man, this is what I'm doing. And one of them, actually, I was texting yesterday, because I got some stuff done. He's like, yeah, anything you do, I'm interested. So he was one of the guys. I'm like, his questions, what are your thoughts? And so the questions were, and I say 20 plus, because I think it was 24, 25, let's go with 24. And some of the questions were pulled up. So like, you know, blah, 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 Phil, here's a question to you. And your response is yes or no, or just like, it's, you know, so I, some of them I had to edit down. One of them I'm pulling out from the last questionnaire. Never ask people about money. People will tell you anything about their lives and their careers. And remember, I take off the last name. So it's only, it's like Phil W. So you don't get a blowback from your industry. And people will answer any question, mostly, you know, unless they get bored, you can tell they're like not happy with the question, except for money. And so I'm not
going to tell your salary. Yeah, that's it.
Which is wild because it's, you know, put money aside. In my that's my whole thing here is put money aside, people, and what do you want to do Monday morning? You're waking up, it's Sunday, you're watching sports, you're hanging out with your friends, your family, watching a movie, whatever you're doing, going to the beach on Monday morning at those 8 or 9 a.m., you're in your corporate world. Okay. Do you enjoy it? Or are you miserable? And I'm trying to make people a little more happier about what they choose and prepare to choose. So on Monday morning rolls around, they're like, rock and roll, let's go, have some fun. I'm loving what I do. And that's a big thing. So, I mean, even when I was in tech sales, I get recruiters calling me up all the time as, you can make, you know, fill in blank more money doing this or that or whatever. And I'm like, no, I want to work less hours. And I'll take less money. And like the joke was IBM. It's like you can go work at the golf course or whatever. But all of them were stumped. And I think there's an opportunity for like people like recruiting or whatever is that, you know, the older generation, less hours, you know, because I don't know, there's so much opportunities out there and everybody thinks it's money, money, money. But it isn't, because some of the most difficult, if everything was money, 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 right? Everybody would go to Wharton and be an investment banker, right? What do they make? How much? A couple million a year, right? That's good cash, right? You and I would take that, I'm sure. But it isn't money. People have to have some purpose and some joy. Money will follow, or, you know, if you really do well, you can move up the ladder and, you know, you can do a little better. But, you know, they just got to chill it back a little bit, you know.
So how did you make sure you had a good mixture of like a day in a life skill questions, values questions, and then, you know, like, because, you know, like I said, like it could be all heavily, like very not personal, like what do you need to get be successful in your career? You know, these skills, or like, you know, you have some questions that are value based, like what do you like about your job or not? So how did you make sure you had a good mixture to get that holistic career picture?
You know, Phil, I mean, here's the thing about it is I wish I could answer it really intellectually, but I really put a lot of time and effort into the questions and I really thought about it. And maybe, I mean, there's things that we don't know about that we're all gifted with. And sometimes thoughts come into my head and I write them down or things come in because I really did think about what I was going to be asking the people. And it's also thoughts that probably I was going through at the time too. Maybe I'm like, you know, what, why is this and what is that? So it was kind of a, you like this one. It was kind of like, because I did sociology in college. And I think I looked at it as more of a sociological experiment. And so it was just things that I wanted to know more of the person and their career choice, you know, versus, you know, the career itself. So I wanted to know, it was a combination of both, I think. And I don't know, I mean, yeah. So, but here's the funny thing is, so I did reach out to all the top sociologists in the country. And I got some good responses. And one guy is like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And he read it. He goes, love the book. It's going to sell, but it's not a sociological review. And I'm like, great. I got that off my shoulder because, you know, everybody only wants to ego stroked and to do a sociology degree. I didn't get in grad school or PhD stuff, but it would have been, you know, something cool just to be, hey, man, I actually got something really interesting done in the world of sociology. So.
I was thinking, you know, like you're doing many interviews, like maybe there's people that you said, when you ask them the questions via written form, they're just maybe not the best writers. So did it ever go in your mind to like, maybe like record interviews? Now I will say this, I ain't trying to add more work to your plate, you know, coding interviews. I'm thinking of this is my PhD hat of like, some people might be better answering their questions verbally and you record their interview and transcribe it. But has that ever came into your thought, or was that ever a thought or with your team or this development of the book?
No, I mean, here's the reason why it really has. I mean, it's a great idea. Okay, so here's an angle to it, because I do see that. I see those interviews, but not for books or anything like that. But that would be great, and there's no question. I mean, I'm sure if somebody's listening, they'll probably steal the idea, and which is good. I mean, I'm not worried about competition. I enjoy. I'll give you an example. You know, one of my buddies in one of the endorsers, like, so it's like in your group too. Gorick, he wrote a book on unspoken rules, and I mean, I don't look at him as a competitor. He's a great guy. He works with me because my book he reads first, he's the second. But some guys in the field, they get a little standoffish. But I'm not too, you know, it's like a so what thing. But when I do see some interviews about people like talking about their careers, and it's a video like themselves, like I'm out of corporate America, so I can do anything I want, right? But if you're talking to the vice president of XYZ Bank, and they're asking him all these questions, I don't, you know, he's got to be, or she has got to be careful.
Guarded. Yeah.
Because, you know, they're like, that pays their bills. That feeds their family. So they're going to be like, oh, I love my job. My manager, when I see him in the morning, we hug and we talk about our issues. No, that's not real corporate America. It's cutthroat. And there's no way anybody is going to talk the truth because they fear blowback, and that's where they come to a guy like me, because I don't use the last name. But it's great information, Phil. I'd say
no. That's actually very truthful. I think there is protection, and maybe writing it down makes you feel like you have a little bit of separation from it. You know, and you're right. The maybe the anxiety of body language and being seen doing it, you could do it at your own pace at home. So that's a good thought to think about, right? You know, thinking about the yes and. So fast forward it, you already talked about it. I mean, you probably got volumes and volumes and volumes of answers. So for your first volume of the book, how did you strategically trim it and say, you know what, I got the collection that is good for the first book, and I feel happy with the ones I'm putting out for the first book?
Yeah, another good one there. Originally, the book was supposed to be 66, and the publisher was like, we got to change the number up. You're too close to the devil on this one. And I'm like, whoa, good catch. It was like, you know, internal humor in my own head, you know, 666, it'd be funny, but, you know, so she's like, no, let's increase it. And I'm like, well, there's a certain page count where people aren't going to buy things. And she's like, oh, how about 100? I go, okay, how about 101 for, you know, English 101, Math 101?
Okay.
So the next one's going to be, Phil, guess, careers by the people, 102.
Two.
So.
Okay.
But the point is, it was just like narrowed down by, like, let's go into sales guys. Vice presidents of sales, maybe there was three or four of them. And maybe of the three or four, two were really good. And so then I had to narrow it down. I did my best. I know the first 66 to 5+ years. I mean, some of these guys are 10+ years. Some of the ones after that from 66 to 101, some were good, but they might have had 1 or 2 years. So it was a little bit more flexibility in the final, like, was it 30 something? But I mean, the point is, it really boiled down to one, different occupation, two, how well it was done. So those are the biggest aspects of it. And they're all across the country. I have one guy from London, but I mean, I know him. He actually grew up in San Diego. So it's not like, you know, there's not too many people from foreign countries. So it's all based in America. I mean, I'll straight up by saying I'm biased. I want America to grow and America to be the best country it ever can be. So I'm trying to help America first. But if I do get a lot of business in England, great. But I mean, I'm just focused here. So the majority of it's like, you know, I get a lot of it from the Northeast because I grew up there, a lot from California. And then it bounces around. I mean, I'm doing a video later on today with some guy who did it from Salem, Oregon. I don't know what Salem is in Oregon. I know of Portland but, you know, I mean, and you never know where you're going to find these people. In the book, a lady I quote was from Detroit. So it's all across the board. And it's just a lot of cool people, but other ones too. A lot of teachers, nurses, my God, I could probably do a book on nurses. You look into it, some teachers are really cool. The teacher one actually is kind of, it's a tougher one. I mean, it's for people interested in being a teacher should read it because it's not pretty. But you know, nurses, you know, teachers, more like the helpful people, you know, so. But, oh, I got one. So,
Yeah, I was about zero to say,
zero politicians. But keep going. Yeah.
That's what I was about to say. Well, I was about to say that, like, what about the lack of, you say, lack of diversity or a lack of point of views? So, like, you know, was there any struggle to say, you know, I need to get more women? I need, you know, I'm a black male. I need to get some more, you know, different identities, like black males, Asians, first gen, you know, like, you know, maybe first gen, like, you know, some of those. But I guess that would say, is there any identities that you struggle to get? And then additionally with identities, role, like you said it, professions, politicians, were there other ones? Like, that was the only one? Politicians, the only, like...
No. Hold on. Okay.
Difficult occupation to lock and load, lock down for a submission.
Yeah. So you threw a lot at me. So let me go to each one. Yeah. Let's first talk about, when it came down to it, I had so many to choose from. And the editor, I was like, oh, you got to get a politician. And I dug. I think to myself, my God, I don't have one. And I remember reached out to the mayor of my town at the time because I was close to him. But he didn't fill it up, which is sad. But the point about it is maybe I get one for the next time or the next book or whatever. But I mean, this, you know, it's a tough gig being a politician and all like that. But I mean, we'll see. But it's just like, it was more or less like who filled it out and who did a good job. So it really wasn't what I wanted. It was what, you know, the book wanted in a sense. So I kind of separate them out and I'm like, okay, we're going to get the coolest ones. As actually the whole thing about, you know, males, females, or, you know, black, white, all that stuff, people have brought that up. And I just totally, I mean, here's my response. And I like your feedback on this one. It's like, I'm like, you know what? Could care less. I'm talking about occupations, all of that. I don't care any background, any sex, any race, any ethnic, help me out with other things I'm missing. Creed,
it's identity, or abilities, know, so. Like actual abilities. I think as a career lens book and a day in the life, it does, you know, like what skills you need. I think those are universal. If you have those skills, you have those skills. But then also, I don't know, but there's also like unbeknownst hidden curriculum and barriers that certain identities have. For instance, and I'm just going to pick the ones that you shared so that I can say you're a first generation, like you're a first gen college student, right? So the access to you being a doctor is going to be different. And there's probably some things in the journey of the profession of a doctor that is different between different identities. Like for a first gen doctor, they're like, maybe in their career advice that they would say, one of the things you need to know about being a doctor is you need to find a mentor or something like that, right? Like you need to find, once you get to med school, find someone to connect with. That's different. Maybe some, like, you know, trust fund baby is like, when you go to medical school, go to the one that's the most ranked, and like your perspective on what it takes to be successful in that occupation as doctors is different based on your identities. So I think, you know, sometimes there's generalized career advice that is blanketed, right? Here's how you do your resume. You know, that's pretty generic. But then like day in the life advice for careers, there's definitely some nuances there. So I don't know. That was just my thought coming into it, right? That's just
Yeah. So a couple things. A, it's an awesome thought. B, what I try to do is narrow people down to three occupations or three fields and all like that. And that's what they should do after that. So I'm just a stepping stone. But I think, okay, a couple things on that one. Yeah, so A, I think that's an awesome idea. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Phil, but I'll throw it back at you. I think that's a book right there. I think that would be an awesome book. It's not my speed of book. I'm going to stick with what I'm doing. But the fact about it is I would love to have somebody write that, because you know what? Here's what you do. Follow me on this one, Phil. You're an 11th, you know, this is young Phil or young Hank or Stevie or Susie, whatever. 11th grade, 12th grade, you know, first year college, second year college. They read careers by the people. They've narrowed it down, and boom, what do? They go into those type of books. They're like, hey, I'm first generation, you know, and they read into that and all like that. But
yeah, I think that's, I got you.
And so technically, you've got to step in. So this is the book between. Wow, Bill, you've blown this thing up. Okay, after careers by the people, you read that type of book, and then you read my buddy Gorick's book after that. So Phil, I think if somebody you should do it. If somebody doesn't do it, I mean, somebody's got to do it. That's
I think it's like, you know, it's like this is the intro 101, right? Like, just this is the generalized advice that you need to know about this career field. And then if you're interested, this, you're putting the power or agency on that person that reads this book, like Susie Bob. Okay, I'm a black male reading this book. I want to be a doctor. Here's some of the things I know I need to know as a doctor, science, whatever. But now that I'm interested in it, I need to dive deeper and find people to connect with and read the individual stories about doctors and dive in. So this is just a gate. I like this. This is a gateway. So you want this to be a generalized, you want this to be a generalized gateway for those that just piqued their interest in careers, and then they need that they'll take it and run with it and dive deeper into the career that they really align with in the book.
Yeah. So really it boils down to is, okay, so just say Phil wants to be, we'll just say if it kicks carpenter, Phil is a young man, wants to be a carpenter. I want Phil before he goes, goes into his carpentry training to talk to 10 carpenters, but one caveat outside your family and friends. I don't want you to talk to your Uncle Hank about it or something like that. I want you to go to a construction site two towns away and see if you can get a meeting with, you know, the guy that runs it and some of his workers and all like that. So you can get some unbiased information. But in that situation, okay, so let's put it as some young guy, first generation low income, or some young woman, first generation low income. They want to be the doctor. Congratulations. It's awesome. I love doctors. And, you know, it's like, go out and talk to the people in those fields. So that's like all I try to do is to get them to think about, because you got to understand, Phil, the first generation low incomes, there's like in those towns or areas, there's like people do a handful of jobs. And that's it. And so the idea of them even thinking out how to get out of it is like is the first step. And after that, I'm like, okay, meet with the people, talk to the people.
Yeah, I like that.
You don't do internships, get a temp job, a part-time job, be a gopher from 3 to 5 on Friday. Get into where these people are and get to know them so you can get some serious real world information. And so that's it. So for that young black guy that you spoke about who is first generation, totally confused, and he's not sure because of the trust fund kid, I'd say, you know what? Focus on this and go to hospitals. I might go to hospitals in the black community and talk to the black doctors and all like that. I mean, so that's what I would say. If he can relate to better, I mean, it's great. But the other thing, too, is I talk to the young man and say, hey, by the way, you know, just be aware. You know, it's like there's so much opportunity. I'll get an example. I'm not going to give names, but when I was involved with some eye issues out in Los Angeles, like the number one guy to go for like holes in your eyes and stuff like that was a black doctor. So the fact about it is, you know, people can say blah, 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 all this stuff. No, you go to Cadillacs. You don't go to, you know, because race only and stuff like that. The guy had some issues with my internal nose and stuff like that. I think the guy was from India or whatever, but again, the best I could afford. And so that's it. So maybe if the younger person has a problem or something like that and is, you know, insecure or something like that with the racial stuff, then you know what? Go speak to the black doctors. Then after that, go speak to the, you know, the Asian doctor, the white doctor, the Native American docs. I don't know, but get as much information from the people who work in that world so you can make that decision and dig and dig. And they want to help. People want to help. I've had people talk to me about, you know, career in tech sales before and all like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's – okay,
I mean,
it's the meanest guy in the history of mankind.
You know? What's a double-edged sword? I mean, a double-edged, I think that's great advice. Like, what I've learned through mentorship, right, and being a mentor and mentoring people is two things, right? Like, one, I do agree with both. You need to find mentors and mentees of shared identities that have a different level. Like, they can, are the experiences and the career advice that they can give also can align with some of the, like you said, hidden other systemic barriers that just that's in that world of being a black doctor. So if I was a black medical student, I'd want to go talk to a black doctor too, right? But additionally, I would also advise them to talk to people of different identities because worldview and perspectives and just what it is. So it's a yes and. I always encourage people, find people in careers that look like you and share identities, but also purposely do the opposite too, because you're going to learn different perspectives. So I have mentors that look like are black males, but also have mentors that are white females. And I learned different perspectives. I've learned different things. We have different types of conversations. So I get different needs filled with different identities. So I love it. I think from what I'm hearing, we're going right back to it is take your book, read what you want to do, and then find connections beyond the book. Use that book as a framework. Use that book and say, I want to be a doctor. Here's some of the skills I learned generally that what's needed. Can you tell me your experience that, you know, is it similar to the things I read in this book? Boom. It's a talking point.
Yeah. Narrow down to, again, three occupations that would help you out the most. And the irony of the comedy is I was endorsed by a black doctor too. So my book has my endorsement with the black doctor. So
yes,
it was a good occupation to choose there.
Yeah. I mean, saying like you got diversity, I'm just curious, you know, I think for you, that would just be anecdotal data. That's not worth the book. Like, but just for you to know, like, wow, like my expertise is so diverse. I bet it'd be cool to see how diverse your participants in, just for your sake, because it really shows honestly, it kind of shows the opportunities of America, right? Like, wow, you got all these different perspectives represented in that book. It shows the depth and diversity of America.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, I know my endorse is extremely diverse, so I got to
everybody else. Yeah, that's, you know, and that's positive.
I've never seen that. It's just whatever can help people out and all like that. But I just really try to narrow it down to, it's like, you know what? If you're terrible in languages, I would say I was terrible in Spanish. Don't go into that field. Find that, you know, the two or three subjects that you really, it just makes you think. Get into there, because you could, you know, you could do some serious wild work in life. And if not, if you just want to make money, go into IT sales. You'll make a bundle. You'll be miserable. But the fact is, go into something you have some interest in, and you'll do well in it and all like that. And I try to, you know, keep them out of the entertainment world and all like that. I go try to find, you know, okay, you could use that as one of them, but for the other two, do something else. There's so many opportunities out there that the country needs and we need in general. And
All right. So this has been a great episode. So we're going to go to my portion of my show called Shot for Shot. You get to ask me any random question. I ask you any random question. You want to go first? Or I go first.
Yeah. So I'll go first. Why did you choose a GMU? I mean, you're a big GMU fan. So why was GMU chosen over like any other school?
For my master's? All right. I mean, this is a quick anecdote. I went to JMU undergrad and went to JMU Mason for my grad school. And you'd think I'd have a really sophisticated answer, but the main point was I'm from the DMV. And when I was looking at grad schools, I didn't want to move. Like, you know, my girlfriend at the time, who became my wife, she wasn't moving. So any grad school had to be in the DMV. And then this is like, take you further. I didn't want to take the GRE. Like, so I said I wanted to help people. I wanted to get a master's in counseling. And when I looked at schools for counseling, GMU did not require a GRE. So I got in, and then I started working in the field. And then going back for now, I'm working at Mason. So that's how I'm getting my, you know, my degree paid for now. But like when I was really exploring, my main value was staying in the DMV, staying local. And I hated taking tests. So that's how I got in to Mason.
Yeah, the GRE killed me. I was supposed to take the GRE, and then a snowstorm in Boston. So I had to take it like 2 weeks later, and I forgot everything. I trained for it, and then I got burnt out and I got killed. So, wow. I don't know if it could have got me to grad school, but good job. Yeah, those tests make no sense. Yeah. Phil, we're going to define your life in one test.
That's SAT. I know. And like, I mean, I'll never use it. And so, I mean, that's what it is. So, all right. So my question for you, one, it's kind of a two-parter. How'd you end up all the way in Hawaii? That's one. And two, how do you stay true to your Boston roots all the way? Like, that's probably the furthest place that you could be from Boston. So how do you stay connected and plugged into you, to yourself?
It's a long answer. So the fact is, I did after being grown up in Boston and stuff like that, I left at 28 just because of the fact is I found no opportunity. And I write about that a big time in the book, because it was really, I mean, Boston lost, I mean, a good producer. So it's up to that. Massachusetts lost me. But I mean, I still stay connected through the guys I grew up with. I still, you know, connect to them. We text and stuff like that, you know, talk about anything under the sun. And which is fun. And last year I got a chance to go back and see them. And it was great. You know, you get a chance, and, you know, it's the same stuff. It's like the same stupidity from when we were, I mean, all of them I met in elementary school. So I've been hanging out with, but you know, all of them for years. And, you know, I mean, some of them passed, but you know, I mean, that's just the part about growing up in a low income area. You're going to have friends that they die out or, you know, something happens. And so, yeah, so I try to stay connected that way. The other thing too is, you know, and then other people that I've just, you know, connected with over the years as I grew up and was leaving the Massachusetts, I'm still staying connected to there. So, you know, we're all grounded where we grew up. People can say whatever they want, but it all ties back into childhood, really, in my view, how adults act. As for Hawaii, it was basically when I went out to Los Angeles, I did well in technology in LA. So one of my managers at the time, one of the greatest guys ever, I was asking him, like, hey, I'm doing good in LA. What about, can I expand? You just get out of, you want to get out of Dodge? You go, can I take Vegas? And he goes, it's terrible. Sure, take Vegas. And then like a year later, I'm like, hey, can I take Hawaii? And he goes, oh, that's even worse than Vegas. And so, yeah. And so when I took it over in business, and I handled it for years in business, I'll be flying out here. And so eventually, you know, decided to make the move to finish off the career in Hawaii. And it was great and all like that, but it's different. You know, LA, Vegas, or any place else in the mainland is different than business in Hawaii. There's cultural rules and norms and stuff. So it's like, sort of like a foreign country in a sense. And it's just, it's an odd place to do business. Sometimes it's a joy, sometimes it's very depressing. I wouldn't suggest it for a, you know, younger person. I think it has to do with somebody's got to be in their industry for a while because decisions take longer and you have to follow different rules than you do in Vegas and especially Los Angeles. Los Angeles is, they could, Los Angeles could care less about you personally. They're like, best solutions, best price, resolve the issue. What you do in your free time, they could care less. Flip it over in Hawaii. You have to keep yourself so extremely clean. You can't do anything. Oh, I hear you aren't having beers at XYZ place. And I'm like, wow, you guys know everything? And so it's just a different world. But there's also this, all these cultural situations, which you have to prepare for, certain types of dress and acts. And it's interesting.
It's a different world.
Yeah. So I kind of, that kind of gave me a challenge mentally. It's like how to act, how to prepare and all like that. So, and it's a melting pot. I mean, a lot of cultures here. So
I love it. I mean, I think it's also kind of like, maybe it's not like if you, it's pretty dope to live to visit Hawaii, but it's a different experience to live in Hawaii, right? Like the live there day to day. It's not like vacationing there, right? You get to see the real Hawaii when you live there.
Yeah. And that's it. It's different. And you know, talk about segregation, the tourists, my God, I was like, oh, the tourists. Because some come over here and they appreciate it and they understand. Some of them, it's like, God, get out of your mentality. You're not in Cleveland anymore. Act normal, act appropriate. When you're going on the beach, appreciate it. Don't be on your cell phone and turning your back to the beach, you know. Appreciate this beauty. It's a rarity. It's just like, you know, I mean, show respect to the local people. I mean, it's just, it's, so it's, when you live over here, it's different. You learn, there's no rudeness. I mean, you learn to take it, you know, if the person in line in front of you is taking their time, take time, chill it out. You know, it's like, but yeah, you put somebody from LA or DC or New York or Boston here, chill it back big time there. So yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been great. This is the part of the show where I call it shout outs and plugs. So you get to shout out, show love to anyone you want to show love. And then plugs, these are the things that you'll share about your, what you're working on, the book and all of that. And I'll make sure to put it in the show notes. So the platform is yours. Shout outs and plugs.
Thanks, Phil. I hope everybody really gets a chance to view my website, read a little bit more about the book. It has a download and excerpt of the book. You can see all the endorsements. I mean, I top with schools. You can see other interviews. You can see book reviews. I got a YouTube page. So, you know, please view all that stuff. Everything's really helpful. And if you're, you know, not in the career change or mentality or whatever, you know, just could you please just buy a book and donate to the local library or donate to the local high school or community college? Or if you happen to have, you know, $1 billion, you know, donate a bunch of them to the favorite school or call me and I'll find a good school for you. And, so, you know, just I'm just trying to get the book out there and, you know, for people to read it, for careers and career choices, graduation gifts and all like that. But I just think it's just like anybody 15 to 25 who's confused with their career, pick it up and give it a read. It's worth it. And if you don't have money, then, you know, go ask your uncle or go work for 2 hours or buy the ebook or go to your local library and say, hey, local library, our tax dollars are paying for you to exist. Buy a book. You know, I mean, that's all I can ask. And I thank everybody involved. I thank Phil for endorsing, Phil for letting me do the show, and everybody who's let me do shows and my endorses. It's just, it's been an interesting journey. And especially when I call the schools and the TRIO programs, anybody that picks up and wants to talk and figure out different angles so we can help the next generation out is great. I mean, I call some people that are very angry and all like that, but maybe they had a bad day. Maybe the dog was sick, or maybe one of their kids are having problems. But, you know, just, you know, you deal with it, you move the ball forward, but just trying to help out the next gen, helping the America out, helping us be stronger as a country. And, you know, just trying to lift people out of that low income barriers. And so, you know, everything works out in the end, I hope. I don't know. I could be wrong. But I was hoping for the best. I felt got to be positive.
Yes. Right? Got to positive. And, like, obviously it works out. But, you know, Mike, I think it's great. I've supported. You know, I thought when I got that random email, I don't know how it is. I was like, let me just, you know, answer this email. And then it's obviously turned into a relationship that I really appreciate. And you've been down and you've really, I've learned, I've read your book and, you know, read, I actually just open and go straight to like a occupation. So it's a great resource. And I just think that you're always down to collaborate and share ideas. And I really appreciate that. So that's one positive that we've gotten out of this and our relationship. So make sure that, you know, you connect with people and meet people where they are. I really appreciate you for doing that for me. So Positive Filter listeners, as you know, every episode is dedicated to the memory of my late father-in-law, Jeff Kirsch, who recently or who passed away. So you can donate to the Jeff Kirsch Anti-Hunger Fund, which I put in the show notes of every episode. Like, subscribe, share, give this a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That helps elevate the voice of the podcast. And thank you so much for listening, and we're out.